The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
He swings, hits it high, and deep, and gone! Still going back, out of here! Welcome to the big leagues!
Deep to center field, and it is gone!
Wow, his first big league swing is going to be a grand slam home run. Swing and drive, mountain right, welcome to the show!
Continuing to truck through this top 100 list here on the call up, I'm Aram Layton. He's Jack McMullen. We've got prospects number 40 to 26 today. Some fun names. That means it's going to be Jet Williams to Max Clark, and then a lot of fun names in between, and a lot of players that are very different. We can't really have a theme for this band. We were hoping like, oh, maybe it could be like the Short King band, but then we realized, oh yeah, like Jacob Mizorowski's in the middle in there, and some other tall folks will be sandwiched in between. But this is a fun group. We're going to kind of talk about everything from prep, you know, first full pro season guys that are hitters to the Jacob Mizorowski's of the world to the Marcelo Myers of the world. Like, this is a really interesting band of players.
Yes, I love it because we start to get into the elite pitching prospects. We don't get to the top two, but we get to kind of that secondary band, and we have yet to, you know, reach a guy like Andrew Painter, that kind of guy. But you've got a Mizorowski, like you mentioned. We get to Ricky Tiedemann. We get to Robbie Snelling. I love talking about those like top flight pitching prospects, and a guy that has what, back-to-back three hit days to open up his AAA tenure in Owen Casey. So we're going to have some fun with this band. I know we are.
Yeah, this is a loaded week. I think we're putting out four episodes this week, which is a blast. And I hope people are enjoying that. Well, we're mostly going to settle into a three a week structure with the occasional fourth if we get an extra player interview, things like that during the season. Technically, this would be like a fifth episode for those who may have caught it. I accidentally published the bonus episode on the public feed. So sorry to those who are bonus subscribers. I pulled it. If you did enjoy it, like, there's a little teaser of what you can get from those bonus episodes that you can subscribe to with the link in the description. But I was breaking down like pitch by pitch Paul Skeens and Jack Leiter starts. But people must have been listening and being like, this is a lot different than the episodes usually. I woke up this morning. I was like, wait, that should not be on my phone. I saw the bonus episode on my phone, so I went back and took it back and put it behind the subscriber wall. But if you did enjoy that, well, there you go. There's a little taste of it. And I guess that would be like 4.25 episodes this week then, because it was 14 hours. It was up there. So I'd like to think that a decent amount of people probably listened to it. If you hated it, well, the good news is it won't be in your feed. If you enjoyed it, you know where to find it.
And the good news is, if you did enjoy it and you want to subscribe, best bang for your buck comes in the first week of the month. Like, here you go. It's April 2nd. So you get a full month, and it's a monthly subscription to four additional episodes a month. I'll hop including on one with you, but a lot of them are kind of, you know, you sitting down Saturday morning with a cup of coffee and it's like, hey, here's who's hot. You've got some fantasy baseball advice in there. You've got some dynasty advice in there. You've got some card advice in there. It is a useful tool if you're into that kind of thing.
Yep. And one of the things I talked about in that bonus episode, I just wanted to touch on before we jump into it, is I did a pitch by pitch breakdown of the Skeens episode the Skeens outing and the Jack Leiter outing. And one of the things I noted in that bonus episode, and I actually ended up tweeting it out last night when I was cutting up video, is five called strike threes looking from Jack Leiter in that outing, which was pretty insane. So when I was able to walk through the sequence, say, this is why this happened. This is, he got 22 inches of vert on this fastball. He got Joey Loperfido looking on a fastball with 22 inches of vert. So after I put that episode out, I texted Joey and I was like, you homered off of him. Like you got yours, but like, what was the deal with all of these called third strikes looking? Cause it would be 1-2, 0-2 counts where he had already thrown multiple fastballs before that. And guys were looking, and Joey's a really smart guy. Give me a very simple answer. Yeah, man, it's just a really damn good heater. That's all I got from him. So like that's really it. Like it's just a really damn good heater. And I think he's got it back to there because the shape wasn't totally there last year. It's back to that Vanderbilt really damn good heater.
Yeah. And, you know, I noticed based on that video that you tweeted out that, you know, a lot of them were on the inner half to lefties, outer half to righties. And that allows a little bit of arm side run. I think that he can do that where it's like on the black and then it you know, it peels back on into the strike zone and he could get some looks there. The other thing that I mentioned to you, like spin vert, that gets takes at the bottom of the zone.
Oh yeah.
That was one or two of them. But yeah, man, like as simple as it sounds, it might just be a really good fastball. Yeah. Like Joey's saying,
it looked like some of them were just, oh man, like this got on me too quick. Yeah, just couldn't pull the trigger.
Just lock up. Yeah. Not time to go.
Fun to watch though. And a lot of arms here that, a couple that we're going to talk about today, plenty of frozen strike threes at the knees. But a guy that does not take a lot of strike threes looking, even though he's extremely patient, is Jett Williams. And that's who we're going to start with at number 40. Of course, as always, link is in the episode description. And on YouTube, you can be following along with us. Jett Williams, Mets prospect. I still want to see more action from him in center field. We saw him a little bit on the backfields at shortstop. I've talked about it, how I actually find that in-person looks for hitting, especially in the backfield, is extremely, extremely valuable to get some takeaways. I still like to look at a large sample size of video because we can fly through 100 at-bats. Defense is really frustrating. I think defense is, as long as you have the angles, video usually can be better. I like it to see arm strength in person, just see some guys' actions. But you might only get a couple balls in a game, and some of them may not be that tough. And you know, you just can't come away with too much. Watching Jett Williams, he made the routine and he looked like, you know, the actions have definitely gotten better and he looks smooth, but the arm is pretty inconsistent and it's not the strongest. And he sailed one that we were watching. Again, I don't want to take too much from one instance and just looking at the large body of video. It did kind of align with that though, in the small, like microcosm takeaway that we had, from the in-person look. Ultimately, I think he's a guy that can plug in there, but I think he's best suited as that, you know, and I've kind of used this a lot, but I really like this template. Like if I was ever in a front office, I would pursue these types of players. The center field, second base, Whit Merrifield type. Mm-hmm. I love that profile. I just think there's a lot of value to that in today's game because those guys can also plug into left. Emergency, you can plug them in somewhere else. I think that's what makes the most sense for Jett long term rather than stretching him thin at shortstop, especially with the Mets situation now where not only you have a guy at the big league level that's not going to be, you know, moving from shortstop anytime soon. Luis Angel Acuña is a great defensive shortstop as well. So I think for Jett, it makes even more sense to get the looks in center. The value for Jett Williams, though, comes from the bat and the legs. Yeah. And the bat, it's an above average hit tool that is accentuated by 70 plate discipline, which is, you know, tied for the best of anybody that we've discussed here. He's one of two guys, him and Tamar Johnson, to walk 100 times as teenagers since 2005. And then there's enough thump in there too. Like he reminds me of, I'm trying to think of like a guy, like shorter guys that can produce a little bit more thump than you would expect, but there's enough there that I think he'll continue to grow into. And then he's got that elite speed. He's a great base stealer and you know, that positional versatility. Another just high floor guy, but I think the athleticism elevates the ceiling a little bit and the field to get on base.
What sucks is when I think short guy with power, I think Altuve, and that's because he's an alien. Mm-hmm. Like there's nobody that you can comp Jose Altuve to. So that's unfair. I like where you're at with the Whit Merrifield thing when it comes to middle infield, outfield versatility. But what Jett has that Whit doesn't is patience. And I actually view Sedan Rafaela as probably the closer comp to Whit Merrifield because Whit is a 5% walk rate guy. And Rafaela is probably going to be a 5-6% walk rate guy. Jet can run a walk rate up to 13, 14%. And I think that's sustainable at the major league level, which is fascinating. Can he play a really good center field? Because if that is the case, you know, it's tough with Drew Gilbert also being on this top 100 list. It's tough because like Luis Angel Acuña might also get looks in center field, but you know, it creates this log jam in a good way of center field options with Nimmo moving to left and Nimmo looking like an elite left fielder. He's a unique one. And I really don't think there are many people like him in the big leagues because he is a 60 runner, because he walks 100 times. This guy ran a 425 OBP through low A and high A this year and a week in double A or last year. Like, amazing. Not very many people can do that. And that's why he went from outside a lot of top 100s to firmly inside the top 50.
100%. And I'm glad you mentioned the walk side of things in terms of like what he did in double A and that little cameo, even in the postseason. This was a big bump for him. He was 19, even at the time that he got to double A at the end of last year. He turned 20 in November. And so it was, you know, he kind of went up there. They knew that it was going to be tough for him. And he's playing in the postseason. He does hit one home run in those extra four games, but that was his only hit. He was 1-for-12, but he got on base at a .389 clip. And this is a double A. This isn't low A. So that's what we talk about, how like, you know, walks don't slump. You always say that. It's just a perfect example of that. He's 1-for-12 with the homer, but he gets on base seven times because of that, you know, ability to get to draw the walks. He walked four times in one game at the double A level on the postseason stage. Like that's impressive stuff. And again, yes, it's not going to happen at the same clip at the big league level, but if he's walking 10, 11, 12% of the time and you have the speed, the field of hit that goes with that, enough impact. I think if you look at where he may fit in with the Mets long term, it's probably second base, but you kind of cross that bridge when you get there. I would love to just see him get more reps in center field, see him turn into a nice defender out there. You know, he's going to be able to play a solid second base. And now you've got this guy that can be somewhat super utility, play all over, and gives you a lot of value with the legs and with the bat. I think besides the walking aspect, though, I think Whit Merrifield is a good comp for what you can get offensively, where you're going to get, you know, a good field to hit and then about anywhere from 12 to 16 home runs.
Yeah,
and I think that 16. Is a good comp. And the stolen base aspect, too.
Yeah, Whit was 16 homers in 2019, but, you know, you take his per 162, he's a .283 hitter with 14 homers. Like, that's totally what Jet Williams can do. He's also 27 stolen bases, I do think. I think that's where Jet is. Whit had, what, three different years where he led Major League Baseball in stolen bases. That's not going to be Jet Williams, but he's going to be opportunistic. I think 45 last year could be a little bit misleading, but there's reason to believe that 30 could be here. And with, you know, like fast guys running rampant, 30 is going to be nowhere close to leading the league.
No. And I think he's going to continue to develop in that regard, too. And this is a fun year to just see, one, how the Mets use him, you know, where they decide to put him defensively. And then two, you know, where some of those aspects of his game, you know, continue to trend. But one of my favorite prospects to watch. He's just a lot of fun and plays the game real hard. Number 39, another guy that'll be graduating quite soon. Colton Cowser, the Baltimore Orioles, made the big league roster after a torrid spring. Made some subtle swing adjustments that I think are really coinciding with what we're seeing here, where I think just slight adjustments to the setup, also his bat angle to just kind of get him on plane earlier and easier. And it looks like he's more than comfortable. He was crushing balls in spring. And I hope he gets consistent run at the big league level. It's a little bit busy, as we know, in Baltimore. But I'm glad he's on the big league team. He deserved that. He earned that. He hit the ball really hard in big league spring training, crushing balls to center field, kind of all fields, which was a nice development as well. And it seems like he settled in after – I felt like the big league struggles last year spilled into AAA at the end of the year.
Yeah.
There's a little bit more swing and miss maybe than we initially thought. But with that said, there's also more power and the approach has looked good so far this year too. He just looks more comfortable.
Before the first time call up, he and Jordan Westberg could have been the two best hitters in AAA. They were two of the better hitters in the International League. Like, you could put their numbers up against PCL numbers. It was ridiculous. And Westbrook hit the ground running. He hasn't left. He's got a walk-off homer to his name. Couser didn't. He went back to AAA. And now I'm going to push back on him being graduated by the midseason update, because we're four games in. This guy hasn't started a game yet. He's got three plate appearances under his belt. It is
which insane. Is crazy.
Yeah. Like, what's the point? My thing is, I saw a graphic that the Norfolk Tides put out of how their first weekend went. And it was, you know, and we mentioned this on yesterday's show. It was Kerstedt. It was Norby. It was Holiday. It was Stowers. It was Kobe Mayo. And there were so many replies and quote tweets saying all five of these guys should be at the major league level. Hell, dude, like Colton Couser should be down there with them if he's not going to play. Like, you need everyday plate appearances, and he's not getting them up there right now, and it's frustrating me.
It is really frustrating, especially because I think, what, like, his first debut of the year, he doubles, and then it's just been, like, pinch hit spots. And it's just, we see that be so detrimental to development. Like, I understand that you can't play every day, and that's why the A's sent down Esteury Ruiz, right? I mean, we're not going to get into that in this episode, but holy crap. The A's somehow trying to justify sending down Ruiz is insane in the name of consistent ABs for his development. But, you know, obviously that's a team that's an entirely different situation. I think it'd be very easy for the A's to find consistent ABs for Esteury Ruiz. But back onto the topic here, Couser, you could find some more consistent ABs. I think you could find ways to prioritize him a little bit more. And I understand it's a little bit scary because you have some established big leaguers and you want to give them some preferred run. And those guys have been performing well too. But I think Couser can perform as well as some of the other guys that are getting run. A little bit more into, like, the specific adjustments that he's made. He was, you know, pretty loud with the bat waggle before, and I felt like started a little bit more open. And it was just a longer journey to get to his launch position. And you pair a longer journey to the launch position, a different bat angle, and a little bit more movement. I felt like his timing was inconsistent. Now it's a little bit more still. He's a big guy. He's strong. And it's still simple, settle into the back hip and go. And it looks a lot more repeatable. It looks like his timing is more consistent, whereas last year with the bat waggle, I felt like, again, I like to freeze frame it. And if you, like, just space bar, freeze frame where he's at pitcher release, I want to see a hitter at the same spot at pitcher release as consistent as possible. And at the end of last year, his hands were in a different spot. His bat angle was in a different spot because of the movement. Now it seems like he's in the same spot at release as almost every time. And I think that's resulting in not only more contacts, better swing decisions, and better quality of contact. If they give him more run, it's going to look a lot different than it looked last year. I think the Orioles know that,
yeah.
But they're almost afraid to try it.
You know, for the same reason that they were afraid to break camp with Kobe Mayo at third base, because they got to get Ramon Urias over there. And you know what the better product is. You know what the better product is when you compare Jackson Holiday and Jorge Mateo. But yeah, like, you're not starting their clocks. I get it. With this guy, I really don't get it. And I know that Ryan O'Hearn had like an 800 OPS last year, but are we really DHing Ryan O'Hearn against right-handed pitching when you can get Santander off of his feet and put Couser in right? My defensive question for you is this. Has the ship officially sailed on Colton Couser, the center fielder? Like, is that a guy that can play center or no?
I think as an everyday player, yes. I think as a guy that can plug in there, no. I think he can absolutely do that. So I think the ship hasn't sailed in terms of, you put him out there, it's not going to be like, oh, geez, what's he doing out there? But if you put him out there for 150 games, I think cumulatively, he'd probably grade out. You know, it's going to be like death by a million paper cuts. Just every couple games, there's a ball that, you know, maybe no one even realizes, but, you know, could have been caught by a Mullins or a better defender. But I think if he's out there, he's going to make most of the plays he needs to make, and he's not going to grade out extremely poorly. But with center field, there's just so many good options out there that ultimately it's not really a testament to or an indictment on, hey, this guy's a bad center fielder, we're moving him. It's more, he's a fringy center fielder. And there's so many good defensive center fielders out there.
If there's one place that you're going to sacrifice offense, it's going to be in center field. And, you know, I think it's center field and behind the dish too. Mm-hmm. And they've got options. Bradfield could be a rocket ship, but with his profile, it just feels like he could fly through quickly. So it makes sense. I wish they would give him some run in right and get Santander DH reps, but I'm not Brandon Hyde.
I agree. I agree. And it's funny, like you think about the prospect promotion incentive and how the Orioles could really be running the table with it. I don't know how it works in terms of, you know, you get a pick for first place, but you also get a pick if your player comes in second. What if you have guys come in first and second?
That would be a unique Orioles adjacent.
I know that you have Wyatt Langford, but I was just thinking about that. And I'm like, you know, the Marlins had that happen in 08. I think they had like seven guys place on the or 06. It might have been. It was 06 or 08 where it was like Hanley, Anibal Sanchez. Like it was a Dan Uggla. I think they had like a handful of guys.
I guess in
the voting.
We may find out with Texas this year with Langford and Evan Carter.
Oh, true.
Yeah, we might. I wonder
if that was any disincentive for the Orioles because like
they knew it was going to be too populated.
I don't know. And I don't want to get like tinfoil cap here, but like you have the prospect promotion incentive is there for a reason because it incentivizes them. And you got to be slightly disincentivized when the Rangers have the two favorites. I mean, even when you have Jackson Holliday up right away, if you told me, you know, gun to my head, who am I picking for rookie of the year? I'm taking Wyatt Langford over Jackson Holliday. And I'm considering Evan Carter with the experience over Jackson Holliday, not to mention Mayo. You know, and again, I wouldn't be surprised at all if either of those guys, you know, if they lost to Jackson Holliday, but gun to my head, probably that's where I'm going.
And let me know if you know in the YouTube comments, if I'm not mistaken, Evan Carter would still qualify as a PPI candidate for the Texas Rangers. I wonder, is it you need to have rookie status and you're on the roster on opening day, or is it your major league debut? Like you have yet to accrue a day.
Yeah. I need to know. I need to read these rules better. Like I
need to know the fine print too. Yeah.
Yeah. I would love the YouTube comments. Like, let me know what you got on that. And I know that's like our job, but I've read it multiple times and like I get different iterations of it. I'll dive into it. We'll talk about it on the next episode. And I want to compare how we interpreted it and then see if we got the full breakdown there. I know this is kind of an aside, but I just wanted to since I teased it, 2006 NL Rookie of the Year voting is really funny. Hanley Ramirez wins it, slight edge over Ryan Zimmerman, who comes in second. Jeez, that makes me feel old because I remember this like really vividly. But then third place, Dan Uggla. Fourth place, Josh Johnson. And then tied for ninth place, three-way tie, Scott Olsen, Anibal Sanchez, Josh Willingham.
Holy
so the Marlins so had one, two, three, four, five, six guys in the top nine, if you include the players tied for nine.
It's amazing.
Joe Girardi won manager of the year. That was probably my favorite Marlins year I've had because I don't remember 2003 very well. That 2006 was a great time.
Was Miggy still there? I think he was.
Yeah, Miggy was still there. I had hope at that point.
Yeah.
38, we got Emmanuel Rodriguez. Got a live look at him in the spring breakout series as well. He's a strong dude, right? Like we're right there behind home plate. Like, what was your initial thoughts? I know you love to look at these guys' legs. I know that's the first place your eyes go. And I always think like, I'm waiting for the day where a player tells you like, Jack, my eyes are up here.
Yeah.
And you're like, I'm so sorry. I'm sorry
for objectifying prospects.
You ever watch, Entourage?
Yeah.
Johnny Drama with the Cavs.
Yeah, that's right.
I feel like that's you with baseball players. But the point being, there's a reason why. That's where all of your power comes from, pitcher, hitter, whatever it may be. That the ground is where the power comes from.
Correct.
And it makes sense that Emmanuel Rodriguez has some of the best raw power in minor league baseball.
There are one of two ways that you can tap into the ground. Number one is doing the Tristan Casas thing, become one with the earth and, you know, do like the grounding, you know, become one with the soil.
Yeah, all that. He's back doing that.
Right. Or you can squat your way out of the gym and you can, you know, like you can create this monster of a lower half. And that in turn elevates absolutely everything. And that's what I saw from Emmanuel Rodriguez. He looks like a fire hydrant. And I'm a big fan of those guys offensively because there are not many limbs that can fly everywhere if you're built like a fire hydrant. And that guy has filled out for as young as he is. And it's a quick turn. It's a quick swing. You'll speak to the swing, but like it looked very fundamentally sound, but he can stay so in control because he's so in tune with the ground because of how sturdy he has made himself.
Yeah, and surprisingly agile as well, right? Like he's a guy that you'd expect the contact rates to be a little bit better, to be honest, because he moves pretty well. He still can get by in center field, and I actually think he's a passable defender out there. I think he's going to be the classic, like, good enough to plug in there, but we got better options. Go play a corner. Although the Twins' long-term outlook's kind of funny. They got a lot of guys like that. I think Walker Jenkins is going to be cut from a similar cloth where it's, yeah, he's good enough in center, but might be better in a corner just because we got some other guy that can play a great center field. But to the point of he can move pretty well. And, you know, that's where the whiff is a little surprising. I think some of it can be the path on occasion where he can get a little steep to the ball and be a little bit in and out of the zone, especially, you know, when you're a little bit steeper to the ball, stuff that's breaking downwards, you can kind of swing over it. And then he also struggled with the passiveness side of things where I think he'd find himself in a lot of disadvantaged counts and then kind of fighting for his life. We talk about patience and plate discipline. He walks as much as anybody, but he's not quite that plus plate discipline guy, because when I watched those ABs, there was a lot of times where he's in a spot where he should be a little bit more aggressive and he takes a strike or early in the count, he takes that hittable pitch and then you're playing from behind. It's much harder to get away with that against more advanced pitching. We always talk about how you might get that one pitch in AB. The flip side though is this guy was 20 years old last year. Injuries have affected him in the past. He got off to a really slow start. And then one, stayed healthy, played 103 games. Two, posted one of the best 90th percentile exit velocities you're going to see, you know, of a player, you know, below the age of 21, 108 miles per hour last season. We talk about the walk rates. The strikeout rate dropped as the season progressed. And if you grab his final 50 games, he walked at a 21% clip, struck out at a 27% clip, started to elevate the ball a little bit more. My only concern right now is, you know, I wouldn't say only, but my main concern right now is how do you hit stuff, especially change ups, you know, slower, softer stuff at the bottom of the zone. He just really seems to struggle to have that adjustability within the zone at this point, where it is a little bit of that. We talk about like the one swing for one spot. I think he has the ability to do it, though. We saw him flick a ball the other way for a double, broken bat double that he somehow hit hard with a broken bat. But there still seems to be too much of that one swing. I know he's capable of doing it, though, and that's why we have him ranked so high. It's not some of the other guys where look at a Jared Kelnick, we're like, I just don't have faith in him really having another swing or being able to be adjustable. I think Rodriguez has it in there. It's just trying to find that balance of getting your A swing off as much as possible, but also being able to have that backup swing to, like we're seeing from Owen Casey, to kind of accentuate things. And Owen Casey's made that leap. Mm-hmm. I think Rodriguez can too. He just turned 21.
Yeah, he just turned 21 in February. Like he's 21 and 34 days old right now. We have to acknowledge that this guy has tons of room to grow, and he's likely going to spend the entire year in AA. After last year, 99 games, he had a 400 OBP as a 20-year-old in high A. It's take a step back, look from the bird's eye view, and see how ridiculous this guy has been at each stop. And he's ridiculous in a different way, like 10 homers in 37 games of the complex. Oh, my gosh. Crazy. Then he goes to low A, 47 games, a 493 OBP in 47 games. Oh, my gosh. And then he runs a 400 OBP at Cedar Rapids. And, you know, he still has that power showcase. So this could be a year if he dominates AA and he runs a 400 OBP and he hits 20 to 25 homers. This guy could level up from 38 on this list.
If Max Muncy played a good left field,
it's Emmanuel Rodriguez.
Yeah, I would say, are you 100% in on that player?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that's what I think, Emmanuel Rodriguez. I was just making sure I had that comp down here, too, that I wrote down. Again, that's why I don't like direct player-to-player comps. I like kind of saying, like, hey, if this player could do a little bit of this, it could look like this. And that's kind of what I see with E-Rod. 37. This is going to be one of the most frustrating players for me. And not frustrating, like, because he does anything particularly wrong. He's young and projectable, but he's tough for me to pick. Carson Williams, Tampa Bay Rays shortstop. He is this high for a few reasons. One, his defense is phenomenal. And that's going to be the selling point. And I think what elevates the floor is this guy is going to play a plus to plus plus defensive shortstop. He also has proven already that he can run into home runs. He needs to prove that he can hit enough, though. And that's where we're still trying to figure that out. I probably talked about him to you as much as anybody when we were going, you know, doing our road trip and whatever, saying I'm really eager to see him. I just want to try to figure out what's up with the swing and how he can get himself right. Yeah. I think this swing that you can see on YouTube, like on the GIF here, like that is where he's at his best. He starts it really early. He's under control and he's kind of working back through the middle. But even then you can kind of see that spin and where he finishes, and everyone's going to finish obviously rotated, but he's a guy that gets really spinny and it really pulls him off of everything. And it's interesting because he has a lot of easy power. He elevates pretty consistently, but I if I remember correctly, because I tend to remember like the swings and those other things that kind of stick with me, I thought that there was a swing when we were at the game where I looked at you, I was like, see, that's what he keeps doing, where he just kind of spun off of a breaking ball and just waved at it. Like there's a lot of non-competitive, like front side leaves wave at it and totally pulls the bat out of the zone, which is a shame because when he's working through the middle, the path is good. It's geared for elevating and backspin, and he's got power. But I'm curious, like what you kind of saw in that live look, and you know where you're at with Carson Williams, because to me he's just a really tough guy to peg.
I was going to use the word spinny. I think you could show a ton of pro pitchers this GIF, and they could not know a single thing about Carson Williams, and ask them, okay, how are you attacking this guy? They're going to tell you, I'm cutting off the inner half of the plate. Yep. I'm going away, away, away. And you don't want it to be that simple with the top 40 prospect in baseball. But as of right now, it kind of is. And is he going to hammer pitches that leak over the inner half? Yes, he will. He's going to be a great mistake hitter. I think we know that already. But what if pitchers execute? Can he get a B or C swing off on a pitch that's on the outer black? And can he drive it the other way? I don't have like the pull rate up in front of me, but I'm sure it's very high. Like I'm sure that guy's not hitting the ball with authority the other way just yet. That is the final step in terms of hit tool, I feel like. But at the very least, you've got an excellent, excellent defender at shortstop that is going to kill mistake pitches.
That's the thing. Kills fastballs too. So kill fastballs, kill hangers, play elite defense at shortstop and walk. You're a big leaguer. You're a frustrating one at times. It might be low 200s.
A big leaguer that's making a lot of money. Like you think about what Willy Adames did last year. He still has immense value. He hit 210, but he's got 30 homer capability and he's a way better defender than Adames is at short.
I'm just worried that, because I think Adames is like what you can hope for and then some. I just don't want it to look like Paul DeJong. And I know he's a better defender than DeJong, but just thinking about the offensive side, like the volatility where sometimes it looks really, really good. And then sometimes it looks iffy. He's so young in terms of like his baseball experience as well. And also he's just young. He's 20. And I'm trying to find the exact piece. I've referenced it on the show a few times. Fangraphs did a fantastic job talking to one of the Rays heads of scouting farm. I think it was the Rays farm director. And his perspective on Carson Williams was actually really, really valuable. I usually take that stuff, especially when it's a publication, like when it was Blake Butera. When guys like that are talking through a publication about their players, of course, there's going to be spin zones, positive things that, you know, they want to continue to, you know, hit on and accentuate because it's their guys and they want to either prove that they're going to be right on them or, you know, continue to bolster their value and stock. But I loved what Butera said about Carson, really a kid that surfed and, you know, never took baseball that seriously, just always came really natural to him. And I thought it was David Lorilla who did a really good job, you know, going back and forth here. But the quote from Butera was literally, he's improving. That said, contact is tough to improve as players move up because the pitching is better. But with Carson, I think it's a little bit different case just because he didn't grow up around baseball as much as most guys. So he's still learning approach. He's still learning how pitchers are going to attack, which pitches to look for, which pitches he hits well, which pitches he doesn't hit well. It's exciting that he's learning that stuff now because the tools are off the chart, the bat speed, the power, the athleticism. He's learning how to be Carson Williams, and that's exciting. The follow-up from Gorilla was, can you elaborate on him not growing up around baseball as much? And I don't want to give away the whole thing, but Butera talks about how he grew up in California, loves to surf. There's volleyball in his family.
He went to Torrey Pines High School. Like, that doesn't scream baseball at all. That screams golf, volleyball, all that.
Which is funny, because actually I think Torrey Pines is a baseball school, which is the funniest part.
Is it?
But it does scream, like, golf and what. Like, but the crazy thing is like, if that is really the case, and I see it in him, and if you just kind of see the way he carries himself, like, it seems like it, then I'm going to be a little bit more patient here. And he's also had some aggressive assignments. So if the hit tool can come along and if he can continue to learn, I think it could be, you know, he could be a monster and he could be one of the best shortstop prospects in the game. He's got plenty of time, but how much time is kind of my question, Jack. Like, at what point do you, because he's going to be in double A this year.
Yeah, he officially.
I'm going to be patient. Like, he might struggle. That's fine. But is it next year where if the struggles continue, is there at the end of this year, if it doesn't look any better? I think that's kind of where I'm looking at it, where it's you got a taste of double A last year. You're going to get a full year here of double. If it doesn't get any better in the second half, then I'm probably not as much subscribing to the, oh, he's just catching on to these things.
I think he needs to stay on track. And I'll get into what I mean by that in a moment. There are four big leaguers that have come from Torrey Pines High School. One of which, Chad Hutchison, played in three big league games. Adam Johnson threw in nine big league games. But then you got Garrett Stubbs and Kyle Hurt. Kyle Hurt's going to have.
Yeah, your point stands. I bet they've got more golfers.
Yeah, I'm sure. But what I mean by stick to the plan is 2022, he spent the entire year in low A. 2023, 105 of his 115 games came in high A. If he is in double A for the entirety of the year, and at the end of the year, we look at Carson Williams and say, okay, he's ready for triple A, that's sticking to the plan. And I'm not concerned yet. But if we look at Carson Williams at the end of this year and say, maybe he should head back to Montgomery at the beginning of 2025 and, like, you know, let's see if things really click and then he can get that quick ascension to Durham, I would start to raise a little bit of concern. Mm-hmm. I think this guy going station to station is totally fair.
I agree with that. And I will say, when you have this defensive ability, when you have the power, I talk about, you know, the 90th percentile over 106, creeping on 107, elevating consistently too. He could be a 32-33% strikeout guy still and be a 4-5 win guy because of the ability to hit fastballs, the ability to hit hangers. Again, if a pitcher comes in and executes, yeah, he might be a pretty easy out from time to time. But if you got guys like Jeremy Pena, you know, doing what they're doing, I think he can be better than Jeremy Pena.
Yeah, man. I mean, he's Outman in the infield. James Outman in the infield.
That actually is a great player. That's a great one too. Outman in the infield could be. And Outman took some time, right? Like, it didn't really click until a lot later. Yeah. So I think that's another great example.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
36, Red Sox catcher prospect Kyle Teal. I think this was one where a lot of people were surprised. Even had some Red Sox fans like, whoa, that's high for Teal. Too low for Meyer, too high for Teal. Sorry. I'll make my case for Teal and then feel free to kind of fill in wherever you want to fill in. I loved him out of the draft. That's the first and foremost. But when a guy out of the draft, like a Matt Shaw, right? That was another guy that we talked about I absolutely loved out of the draft. And then their pro debut goes kind of exactly or if not more. Just even better than I thought it would go. Like, that's a guy that's going to usually get the helium even quicker because he's already high on him out of the draft and had him probably higher on, you know, our draft rankings. But Keel's pro debut couldn't have gone much better, and he got some aggressive assignments and kept getting pushed. What was it, 26 games? Hit 363, 482, 495. Not trying to buy too much into that sample size, but we saw more of the same, which was patient approach, really good feel to hit within the zone in that small sample, 88% in zone contact, which is actually right about the same as his college numbers, which is impressive. And actually, he was more selective than he was in college. He's got a really good feel to hit. I think he's a plus hitter. When you look at just the feel for the barrel, the consistency, he swings hard, but it's under control. It's that controlled aggression. And he's comfortable against lefties. He sprays the ball all over the field. He could stand to add some strength. Like, he's definitely like thin at this point, especially when you look at the arms and stuff like that. If he adds a little bit more strength, all of a sudden that power ticks up. And I think that's even going to help that the BABIP and that side of things too, because he just seems to spray balls all over. When you look at the approach, you look at the field of hit and then the power potential. I love the offensive side of things from the left side, and then catching, so athletic back there. Fundamentally, he was raw. He's gotten better and better. The receiving has come a long way, and he's great at limiting the running game. He can get a little bit better with the consistency blocking wise, but when you have a catcher that athletic, I usually am going to bet on the blocking continuing to improve. It's hard for me to find a glaring issue with the 22-year-old Kyle Teal at the catcher spot, and that's why we've got him as high as we've got him.
So he is, I think, the perfect example of my theory that you should just take a guy that rakes in the ACC or the SEC. Those are the two power conferences in college baseball. I think, like, I'm not ready to put the Pac-12 in that just yet, because like there are some runts in there, but the ACC, there really aren't many runts, and the SEC, there aren't many runts. This guy hit 400 at Virginia during his draft year. You know that he's a solid catcher. I mean, you take the guy that hit 400 with 13 homers and didn't punch out, man. I'm going to go back to like 2019 ACC ball, and I'm going to tell you who the OPS leaders were. And I guarantee you there are not going to be very many flubs here. But like Teal, awesome. Even a Trey Lipscomb, for example, that guy raked in the SEC. And guess what? The Nats felt comfortable enough fast tracking him to the big leagues, and he had a homer in his first two big league games.
455 in big league spring training.
You're going to find a major leaguer. Like a good one, I don't know, but you're going to find a major leaguer. The Red Sox saw this guy falling, and you know, it's a keep it simple, stupid method, a KISS method of like, hey, why is this guy still available? We're going to take him. And they aced it. They didn't overthink it, and they crushed it.
Everyone else overthought it. When we were covering the draft, I'm like, how is he falling? How is he falling? How is he falling? How is he falling? And I think there was some concern about it, kind of was that 1 year breakout. And I know draft models don't love that. I know team draft models get increasingly concerned by a college performer kind of breaking out in that singular year. But it wasn't like he had bad years previously, but no, I understand that. But when I'm looking at what he does in the box, the athleticism, and then again, you see the defensive improvements that he has made. I love the operation in the box too, the way he sinks into the backside, the way he holds the back hip with that hovering leg kick, and just is so under control. I'm excited. I think he debuts. I wouldn't be shocked if he's a September call-up because of how advanced he is, but he definitely, I think, can break camp in 2025 with the Red Sox, and he's definitely the future of their catcher position.
Portland is going to be a roster to identify later this week. It's going to be Kyle Teal, Roman Anthony, Marcelo Meyer, Nick York. They're all going to be there.
My goodness. I will make sure to go see them play this year while they've got that group together. 35, Ricky Tiedemann, Toronto Blue Jays, left-handed pitching prospect. I talked about him on the bonus episode two episodes ago about that. I really think that it was more of a matter of wanting to continue to build him up. Mm-hmm. I do think they want to see some things command wise, but I wouldn't be surprised if he makes a handful of starts and then gets up one way or another. I wish I had a little bit more information on what the Blue Jays plans are with him. Like if they're adverse to putting him in the bullpen as a swingman type and managing his innings, because I do think that for a team that's in win now mode and a pitcher that's often injured, and that's a big reason why he's not higher, by the way, is I just have I try not to bake in injuries too much with pitchers. But when you have a track record of it, and then he even shows up to spring training and has a hammy issue, it's just too much to ignore with Tiedemann. And it's not like we're, you know, really accentuating it. He's the 35th ranked prospect. I thought the first outing was a little bit of an example, though, at the same time in AAA. He goes 2 2/3, 65 pitches. He only allows one earned run on a home run, but two walks, hit by pitch, 3 Ks, also allowed 3 stolen bases, has struggled to hold runners on as well. I am getting increasingly concerned about the reliever risk here, the swingman risk. The stuff is great. You have a plus heater or better. You have, you know, a plus slider and above average changeup that I think flashes plus. But the command is kind of, you know, backed up as he's battled injuries. And, you know, obviously he just has not been able to be stretched out as he's battled injuries. And yeah. I'm starting to wonder if this guy's ever really going to be able to be stretched out to 100 pitches and pitch every fifth day. And if that's a concern, I'm probably taking some other pitching prospects over him.
Yeah, I'm taking other lefties over him. And you've got a lefty over him that we're going to talk about in a moment. But I'm with you. And like, I start to get concerned because we have yet to see him with the leash taken off. And like, he's been on such a tight leash the entirety of his professional career. We have no sample of like, yep, the Blue Jays are letting Ricky let it rip. And, you know, he's only coming out of the game when he starts to really dwindle at like 90, 95, 100 pitches. That hasn't happened yet. He made 16 starts, 18 starts as a 19-year-old in low A, high A, and double A, 78 2/3 innings. Okay. Comes back last year, 44 innings across 15 starts. That's like 3 innings a start. Mm-hmm. And now his first start goes 2 2/3, 4 starts in the fall league, 18 innings. We yep. have yet to see Ricky Tiedemann go 5 or 6, and we can't call him the best left-handed pitching prospect in baseball until he goes 5 or 6. It's the Tink Hentz thing. If yeah. you wanted to operate in a vacuum, Tink Hentz was a top 30 prospect in baseball because yeah. when he was throwing, it looked great, but he didn't throw 6 yet. Mm-hmm. That is probably what jumps out most to me. Now, the positive is he's been really freaking good everywhere that he's had a leash on him. When he's on the mound, he's disgusting. Yep. And I hope to see what an unleashed Ricky Tiedemann looks like this year. But if we have to wait until June or July, I'm going to question it even more.
Yeah, and that's where I'm wondering, you know, Baden Francis, does he hold on to that rotation spot? But also, you don't want to deplete your bullpen by having a starter that's going to only be able to go 65, 70 pitches. And the problem is when you're also cut shorter in terms of you're not going to be able to go 100 pitches – and you're not efficient, it makes it even, you're working on even tighter margins. I will say that the Arizona Fall League stint did reinvigorate some optimism for me because we had not seen him go, you know, consecutive 5 or 6 days off, but just even just going every week, 75, 77, 70, and then 79 pitches. There was a 150 pitch outing in between, but we had not seen him do that since 2022. So to see him doing that recurrently was very encouraging. And then seeing some good things in big league spring training was encouraging. He was bit by the long ball a little bit too, but that's okay. I don't think that's going to be a major issue long-term, but I think it's just, he's a tough player to peg with the injuries and not really seeing him stretched out too much. And now a little bit of inconsistent command. I wonder how they're going to use him and when they're going to use him, but I do know that this is a valuable big league arm one way or another. And by the way, still just 21 years old. So this is just a name I'm excited to monitor to see what the Blue Jays' plans are. But I hope he gets up, and I'd even just like to see him out of the big league bullpen or in a swingman role, because why waste the bullets in AAA? I think he can continue to work on things with the big league team, but they may not want him throwing as frequently, which is part of the issue. We saw Sixto Sanchez, much more extreme injury example, but he throws back-to-back days for the first time like ever, and in the second time out of the bullpen, he's throwing 91 by the time the inning was almost over. So I don't think that happens with Tiedemann, but it's not something he's used to be a, and you don't want to waste a roster spot on a bullpen arm that you can't use several times a week. So I imagine they try to keep him as a starter, and they're going to try to stretch him out. And barring any setbacks, we could see him up in a month or two. I don't know. That said, if it all comes together, you have plus fastball, plus slider, nasty changeup, at least fringy, but I think could be average command. And that's the stuff to be a two. I think his other extenuating circumstances pull him back to more of a 4/3 and flashes of more. It's just a tough peg for me.
I'm really happy with how that went about because I did have a Ricky Tiedemann Sixto Sanchez comp on my bingo board today. So
that was not the comp. Do not do that to me.
I'm kidding. I just the parallel between Ricky and Sixto Sanchez was actually on my bingo card that sits in front of me. So
congratulations.
I got it. Thank you.
Another really fun arm, and he's been healthier so far, knock on wood, the loudest stuff you're going to see. Jacob Mizorowski, right-handed pitching prospect, Milwaukee Brewers. I mean, can I interest you in an 80 fastball? Can I interest you in a double plus curveball and a cutter at 95 and a changeup that he mixes in even sometimes from just the funky, bizarre release point at 6-7 and crazy data points? And, oh, yeah, by the way, it's 101. That's Jacob Mizorowski for you. And the only question really is at this point is command. And it's a pretty big question. Talk about a guy that could circumvent the highest of walk rates. Jacob Mizorowski has the stuff to do that.
He is fascinating. I'm going to pull up the hitters that he saw, but he had one appearance in big league spring training. He saw four hitters. He struck out three and walked one. the only competition that Jacob Mizorowski faces, I really think at any level, is Jacob Mizorowski.
Yes.
You've got an 80 future fastball. You've got a 60 cutter, a 70 curveball, a 50 changeup. That would win Cy Young's if it was not a 35 future command.
Yes. It's amazing. That's the problem. What do you think? Like, can this command come along? Can we get it to the point where it's a 40? I don't see it because that's why I have a 35 future. 35 command, even with this stuff, he'll be a starter and it'll work. It'll be a roller coaster from time to time. Where do you think the dust settles command-wise?
Yes. So he threw against the Dodgers. He walked Taylor Young, but then he struck out Chris Oakey, Tyrone Lorenzo, and Yainer Fernandez. I wish I could tell you that they should be able to figure out how to improve the command, but you go ahead and watch the GIF if you're watching on YouTube. How do you like slow that down and analyze it mechanically? He's elite because of where the limbs are going. They go places that nobody else's limbs go. You can't. I would have no idea if I were a pitching coach how to even start analyzing this guy. And it's like, yeah, why don't we quiet your mechanics down? No, like that's telling Jacob Mizorowski to stop being Jacob Mizorowski. So it might be one of those things where it's like, hey, if he feels like, you know, a little cue that can help him out, great. But you might just have to be okay with it because, frankly, what you have is borderline rare, never before seen, and you need to be okay with that.
And that's the thing. And then, you know, maybe it's just as he throws more, he'll get a little bit more comfortable with just controlling all of the limbs that he has and all of the length that he has. He's 21, just turned 21, and not a guy that has a ton of innings under his belt, JUCO guy, all that good stuff. So I still have some optimism that it can settle in a little bit more there. The one thing that I noticed, small sample, but it's something to monitor, is the fastball might even be better this year because he killed some horizontal. That might also help him located a bit more, but from the outings I saw in spring training, small sample data, it's not enough to take anything crazy, but I did notice that he had a lot less horizontal movement and a little bit more ride to it, which at that velocity with 7.5 feet of extension, and from a release side of how a guy that is 6'7" releases from 5.1 feet or almost 5 feet flat blows my mind. And that's why it's the outlier of outlier fastballs. We talk about outlier being thrown out too much. Like that, this is an outlier.
Yeah,
it's crazy. So if that command gets to 40, he's a frontline guy, I think. And that's kind of the big sticking point. And we'll see how those things go. But the arsenal looks ready to go, and he looks like he could be a major problem. I just can't wait to see what it looks like as he continues to try to rein it in a little bit more and fill up the zone. he can get away with falling behind hitters. So that's the thing. He can fall behind 3-0 and throw you three straight fastballs and send you back to the dugout. So that's something he has working for him that very few do.
So it's not going to happen. Like, let's get that out of the way. He was 5.5 walks per nine last year. If he gets that down to 3 walks per nine, he's the best pitching prospect in baseball.
Yeah, I'll take him over just about everybody.
Everybody. Yeah. Like that tells you how much command would play into this arsenal. Yeah, like it's 34, but it's almost a deceiving 34 because it's 34 with the ceiling of like 6 on this top 100.
Yeah, and the floor of the bullpen. So
yeah,
it's just
a floor of 100. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just crazy. 33. We talk about plenty on the show, and one of my favorite prospects in baseball relative to, I think, where others have him, I guess. Like, if you could say, like, who are the guys that just baseball has higher than everybody else and pick the favorites that way, I think Josue de Paula would be one of those examples, because I every time I'm looking at him, I'm like, oh, are we pushing him too high? I start to do that game of would I take this player over him, would I take this player over him, and it settled at 33. Like, I was not taking Mizorowski over him at this point because of how much I believe in the bat. I think it's going to develop into a plus-plus hit tool. When I look at the swing mechanics, when I look at the way he already has a feel for his body, it's such a early and smooth and slow load that is just consistently on time. He gets the pitches in different spots and with ease. The control of the barrel is really impressive, and the barrel accuracy is really impressive. And then you see the frame. He's already big for a young kid with more room to add strength. I think he's going to grow into above average game power. So you're going to have a 70 hit, I think, is what he can grow into with above average power. That's going to be one of the best hitters in the minor leagues and a guy that could be an absolute monster offensively. He also has already demonstrated the ability to, you know, draw walks, decent feel for the strike zone, handled an aggressive assignment, showed really good things in you know, the backfields and additional work. I just think this guy is going to be really tough to punch out and blend a rare plus-plus hit or at least easy plus hit with above average power and a good approach.
You won't see a grade discrepancy or a grade disparity between present and future value as great as him anywhere else in the top 100. Like a 15-point swing and hit, a 10-point swing and plate discipline, a 15-point swing and game power. When it comes to the key offensive like grades that you put out, this guy has more room to grow than anyone in the top 100. And that's why I'm sure he's as high as he is.
I mean, 17 years old at the start of last season, and I just what I saw from him, I've not seen. And we talk about, oh, yeah, but they do it at the complex or the DSL. You got to take it with a grain of salt, even though I like the swing mechanics. And that's true because poor pitch recognition can kind of, you know, expose that. Sometimes video, you can't be as privy to the bat speed. And if the bat speed isn't as quick as you think, then it'll be a little bit less of a translation to contact rates against better pitching. But we saw De Paula do it against low A pitching. I've seen him do it in some tough backfield matchups. And I just think it's only going to get better and better at 17 years old to be that big and that under control and that smooth with the path that he has. And then also flashing some exciting power, like flashing those 109s, 110s with ease. It's a very low effort swing. I am very, very bullish on what he's got going on. By the way, he ran a sub 20% chase rate in his age 17 season, mostly playing in low A. The defense is a work in progress, that's for sure. But he was 17 last year at the start of the season. He's going to be 18 now in high A at the start of the season. He's going to start the next year, maybe 19 in double A, or he could get to double A this year with how polished he is. I think this is a guy that's going to be, with what he does in high A and his youth, like he's going to be a consensus top 50 prospect by the middle or the end of the year, in my opinion. We're going to get to prospect number 32 in a moment. That's Robbie Snelling. Before that, a quick break.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, 32, Robbie Snelling. we had on the show a few weeks ago, a really fun interview, really insightful, talking about his football background, talking about, you know, what worked for him last year, how much he worked on the changeup this past season. The Padres have a good one here, and there's a reason why he wasn't included in that CSTO. I deem him, no one's untouchable in the AJ Preller world, but he's got to be as close as it gets. What he did last season was fantastic. That's why he won just baseball's minor league pitcher of the year. Yeah. When you have the command that he has, when you have the feel for three pitches already, and the changeup's a little bit more of a work in progress, but the slider already flashing plus, the fastball above average, I do think he could grow into plus because he's 6'3", 210 athletic. I think will grow into a little bit more velocity. I do think he's a guy that could tick up. It may not be front line, but the probability of him being a number three and a guy that can eat as many innings as anybody in the big leagues when he gets there is the reason why I think it's hard to justify taking many other pitching prospects over him.
Four-star linebacker pitcher. You think they look more like Ronel Blanco, where like absolute units for arms. The buys and tries are crazy. Like, look at Ronel Blanco. He does not look like a starting pitcher at all. But Robbie Snelling is way more flexible than you would ever expect a four-star linebacker to be on the mound. And I think it is that flexibility. It's that loose arm action and that loose delivery that creates like the best of both worlds thing, where he's clearly a very strong guy. And you met him. I'm sure the handshake was crazy and he looks the part. He's filled out. He looks like he could be a DH in Major League Baseball, but instead he gets on the mound and he looks loose. He looks limber. And you've got a strong guy that can be loose and limber. No wonder the command is as good as it is. I think the 60 future is as good of a command grade as we've got in the top 100. And the fact that it's coming from a guy with this stature is impressive.
It's up there. And he's got the mentality up there as well. And you know, the makeup aspect is definitely another thing that kind of puts him a little bit further up. To do what he did at 19 years old, climbing low A, high A, double A, throwing as many innings as he threw across all of those levels. I mean, if you include the postseason appearance, 107 and two thirds innings, like that is a lot for the first pro season of a lefty, punching out 122, walking only 36. And the fastball, I thought shape wise, continued to get better and the command continued to get better. The slider looked really darn good. And then the changeup, even though he said he worked on it this offseason, it was more effective for him as the year progressed. So he's got a lot of different ways to be able to get you out, and he can mix and match pretty comfortably. I think he leaned on the fastball a little bit more last year just because he was having success with it. But I think we're going to see a little bit more of a true three-pitch mix. At 20 years old, to be starting the year in double A, I think he could be up by the end of this year, definitely early next year. He's going to eat innings. He kept the ball in the yard. Four home runs, by the way, as well. Just does not give up hard contact like ever, which is another part of the reason why I think he's just going to be a durable and consistent arm that is so elusive in today's game.
Yeah.
31, Jefferson Caro, another one of the longtime Just Baseball call-up favorites. Milwaukee Brewers catcher who should probably start the year in AAA, right? He's in AAA right now, right?
He is. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought so. Okay. I haven't double checked on the Nashville roster yet. I've played the full season in AA. Fell off in the second half a bit. I think he also just ran out of gas a tad because of just how much he was playing. I don't think he'd ever played that much before. He's a guy that's the example of the above average hit, but the poor plate discipline kind of takes him out of that. But he's a plus defensive catcher, maybe even better than that. Moves so well, rocket for an arm. One of the rare defensive highlights that you see us put a gift for, throws a guy out from his knees. He did that several times last year. He is going to be one of the better defensive catchers, I think, by the time he gets up. And then when you add in above average game power as he continues to elevate more and an above average hit, as long as that approach can get a bit better, it's really hard to poke a hole in Jefferson Caro's game, where I think he's going to be that well-rounded catcher that also hits the ball pretty darn hard.
So Caro has been diagnosed with a shoulder subluxation.
Oh, I didn't even see that.
According to general manager Matt Arnold, and will receive a second opinion once the inflammation subsides. Todd Rosiak, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. I knew he exited on opening day, forgot what it was. I think he was diving back on a pickoff, and it was a partial dislocation of his shoulder. So we'll see how long that holds him out. Sucks. When he's healthy, he is fun to watch catch. Like, there are very few people that are fun to watch catch, but Yachty was fun to watch catch, and I don't ever want to put that on anyone because Yachty is an 80 grade fielder, but like, he makes catching fun.
It's like the JT fun to watch catch. I think the way he moves back there, how aggressive he can be with back picking runners, and
better
and
examples agile. Better examples, Gabby Moreno. Moreno is fun to watch catch.
And just if he can cut down on the chase, the above average hit tool, bat to ball wise, is there, above average power. He could be 20 home runs, maybe a little bit more. He can hit 260, 270, maybe even a little bit better than that. He's not going to walk much, even if he does improve, but you're going to get ridiculous defensive ability. Hopefully he comes back healthy. I love what you're getting here from the catching position, and the offense could really put him over the top to make him one of the better young catchers in the game.
For sure.
30, Marcelo Meyer. Boston Red Sox shortstop prospect, who I do think is going to bounce back nicely this year after another guy that dealt with a shoulder issue finally got that thing right and should be 100%. He's looked good from what I've heard on the backfields, and I haven't gotten to see a live look at him, but as some of the video I saw, looks like the bat speed's a little bit quicker now that he's healthy. Another guy that's a great defender at shortstop, another guy that has above average power from the left side. I do think that there's similar to what we're talking about with Couser, the movement pre-swing is kind of hard to time up. Also very aggressive. So that makes me a bit more concerned about the offensive consistency. But when you have above average power from the left side and a nice path, it's just some pre-swing moves and things that he needs to clean up and a little bit of length, though. The defense, above average power, and he's still young. Marcelo Meyer has a great chance of being an above average everyday shortstop.
How much of last year do you think was health dependent? I'm not ready to say that it was entirely health dependent. He might have been a little overmatched by double A pitching last year, but you have to assume that go around number two in double A is much better in terms of just success. And that could be attributed to him being entirely healthy. I think it's hard for me to attach a percentage of like, this is why he struggled because he was hurt.
Yeah, I do genuinely think that there were some swing pattern issues that were a big part of it that would have got exposed a bit more as the season progressed anyways. I don't think that, and I understand that he may have felt a little slower, felt like he needed to start it a bit earlier, and maybe that's why he was a little bit more swing happy, but I also just think the approach and some timing inconsistencies were going to be exposed a bit more in double A regardless. I do think that it was at least a third or more of the issue. Could even be closer to half if you want to, really just talk about maybe the mental side compounding there, because it's like, oh, I don't feel like myself. I don't feel like myself. And then you press even more. And I think by the time you can pretty much throw away, I think that final month, he knew he wasn't right. I think that's where things started to really compound, but you still look at the numbers over the course. And even when he was going right, there were some yellow flags and concerns of things that, could have caught up to him in double A. Approach wise, I still think that when he was healthy, you saw a little bit more of him using the whole field. You saw a little bit more impact, and you saw a bit more consistency bat to ball wise because I think he was a little bit quicker. So I do think he's going to be a lot better. I think that hit tool can track closer to average, but the approach needs to improve. And I think a lot of that's going to come from repeating his moves in the box and simplifying things. He's very pull happy at times. He likes to hook balls, but when he's at his best, we've seen him drive the ball with authority the other way, and he has the ability to do that. He does have the ability to elevate, and we've seen him flash EVs. Like, his 90th percentile, if you cut out the final 2 months, was 105. So there's power there. It could grow into plus, but there's a lot of answers that we need, and there still were some major issues even before the reported shoulder thing against secondary stuff, especially like sliders and pretty much anything breaking hard. It just seemed like he was rushed and waving at it. So there's some things that he needs to adjust. But when you have the defense, you have the offensive potential there. There's just so much to like with Marcelo Meyer. And I'm excited to see just healthy, no extenuating circumstances, 21 years old, see what it all looks like.
For sure.
Going to 29, Owen Casey. We don't need to spend too much time on Casey because we talk about him like every third episode. Chicago Cubs outfield prospect. We talked about him actually last episode and just guys that have stood out offensively right off the bat. That hit tool now is probably getting closer to the 40, right? Like the, instead of the 35, the plate discipline is closer to that 55. the game power. I mean, he can hit 40 home runs when he is, you know, fully hitting enough and coming into his own. And I think we're seeing the more complete version of Owen Casey that we had been talking about for that could be, you know, on the way for the last couple of years. We're talking about those B swings, being able to drive the ball the other way, but also when it's in the zone and in a spot where he can do damage, he can put him up 118. This is a scary blend now where the hit tool is coming along. It's some of the best raw power in the minor leagues, some of the best power period in the minor leagues. And now you're seeing a guy become more complete of a hitter. Look out for Owen Casey.
44 plate appearances in big league spring training. He slashed .333, .409, .564. So that's a .973 OPS, three doubles, two homers, 11 driven in 16 games. He started his AAA career as a 21-year-old, 5.5 years younger than the league average hitter in AAA, 7-for-12. He's so good. And I look at the Cubs' first four games, and their DH spot was filled by Christopher Morel in the opener, Garrett Cooper against a lefty in game two, then Seiya Suzuki to get him off his feet, then Ian Happ to get him off his feet. Why not just have a consistent DH? I think Owen Casey is the Cubs' consistent DH against right-handed pitching before the year ends.
And I love that you mentioned the right-handed pitching side, because of course he is better against righties. Had a 988 OPS against righties last year. But when you talk about a guy with a fringy hit tool from the left side, splits could really de-escalate that hit tool to below average because, okay, then he's going to struggle when he sees more lefties. Big league teams are going to bring in lefties more to face him out of the bullpen, blah, blah, blah. He's going to be a fringy hit tool guy because he's just big and long levered and there's going to be swing and miss. But when you also are able to at least put up respectable numbers against lefties, that does help me feel better. And he's just gotten better and better left on left. And we've just kind of seen that. And I think ultimately that's something that will allow him to be an everyday guy, but to get up now and help, he definitely can be a guy that just gets into the DH spot and crushes righties. And I mean, we saw it last year just with how ridiculous the numbers were, especially against righties. The last thing I'll note, and I did this, I mentioned this in the thread that I put out on Owen Casey during the offseason, but there are only two guys, as far as I know, two prospects that had a 90th percentile of 110 miles per hour and above, and a contact rate within the zone above 77% or 76%. I forget what the exact threshold was that I pulled, and it was Owen Casey and Junior Caminero. So, I mean, that's pretty good company from a power perspective, and that's why, again, beyond what I've seen from the swing, beyond what I've seen in person, it's just one of the best power strokes and that you're going to get in the minor leagues, and a guy that looks like he's much closer to big league ready than I think anybody would have expected this quickly.
Yep.
28, Adel Amador, second base prospect, most likely Colorado Rockies, might play a little short in a pinch if needed, but second base is the long-term home. Healthy, another guy coming off of a hamate that definitely affected him last year as well. It's hard to know how much of it was the hamate and how much of it was just the AA competition. I've talked about it. I think it's the best hit tool in the minor leagues outside of maybe Jackson Holliday, but just bat to ball wise purely, I'd take him just along with anybody. He pairs that with, you know, the chase rate below 20%. And then the EVs for a guy that makes as much contact as he does, especially from what we saw in his last healthy season in 2022. If the 90th percentile is hovering around 102, and I think he's going to grow into a little bit more power as well, with his contact rates and his approach, he's a shoo-in to just hit for a ton of average and walk as much as he strikes out, which even with a up and down last year for his standards, did walk more than he struck out.
Yeah.
It's just such a high probability big leaguer who's still just 20 years old.
It's crazy to just see 322 plate appearances. Like, he played 70 games. 39 walks, 37 punchouts. Like, that feels like what, you know, like a Kyle Teal does in the ACC, but he's doing that as, you know, a 21-year-old in professional baseball getting up to AA. He's going to start in Hartford. I assume that he'll follow a quick Tovar type thing where, like, he'll be in Hartford for the overwhelming majority of the year, would go to Albuquerque for a couple weeks, and then could get up at the end of this year. You've got a 2025 ETA. The Rockies may stink.
Yeah.
They may want to see Amador up by year's end.
I'm with you. I think it's very possible, especially if he's showing the things that we think he can show and he's looking like the hitter he can be. That hit tool is going to carry him, but the fact that the power can get to like close enough to average,
solid. Yeah,
and the plate discipline is as good as it is, I'm always going to believe in a guy like that having being an above average big leaguer. And I think there could be more than that, especially in Coors. It's so perfect for him in that type of offensive profile.
It's amazing because you got the spacious outfield and he's got enough power to drive the ball into the gaps. Like I think I mentioned it at the end of last year when we kind of did the breakdown of this. He may lead the league in triples several times. Like if you're going to lead the league in triples, it's great to have Coors Field at your home ballpark, but he's going to split gaps, hit the ball hard enough, and that thing's going to roll out of the wall.
100% agree. And this little paragraph here is one of the things that really sells me on him as well. The right-handed swing's a little bit further behind, but he's going to hit way more from the left side. And from the left side, he ran a 94% zone contact rate, not 89% overall contact rate. And I know that you're not going to match those numbers at the big league level, but just being able to compare that to the big leagues, like that's Arias level at the big league. So if you're the Luis Arias of the minor leagues and you're hitting the ball harder, yeah, odds are you're going to be a pretty darn good big leaguer.
Yeah.
27, Spencer Jones, another guy we've talked plenty about, so don't have to get too deep into it, but what a spring from this guy. Another swing adjustment guy that's a big reason why I'm subscribing to what we saw. Also, I don't like the small samples, but when you have a small sample of ridiculous stuff, which was not swinging and missing within the zone pretty much at all for a large stretch, better plate discipline, like he was not chasing at all, which was part of the issue in 23, just way too aggressive. So being more selective, making more contact within the zone and still hitting the ball as hard as we've seen, 470-foot home run in spring training. It's a guy that we're a little too early on, had too high, and then I think I reacted too much and dropped too low, and now here he is back where we had him right after the draft. Another guy that was one of my favorites out of the draft, and I think I got a little concerned too quickly just from some of the things I was hearing from scouts, and that's why sometimes you got to take it with a grain of salt sometimes, because some of the noise can be reactionary, especially when you haven't had as much hitting experience like Spencer Jones. Like he had Tommy John surgery early in his collegiate career, only really hit for one season. So this pro season was really his second full year of hitting, at any legitimately high level beyond high school. And now we're seeing going into his third full year, an adjustment and results and tangible adjustments with tangible results. I think it's all going to start to come together for Jones, who, by the way, also is like looking like he's closer to a 70 runner.
Yeah.
I probably should bump that, especially with what we heard from like Yankees camp, him maybe being one of the fastest guys in the org, just with how big those strides are. We saw him steal 40 plus bags last year. I think if the hit tool is now closer to 45, the swing decisions are now closer to at least average, but now it looks like that might even be a bigger jump, but we got to see a larger sample. The game power, I mean, it's 40 plus if it all comes together. And the legit ability to stick in center field. I mean, this guy could be a monster. This guy could be a superstar.
He's 40-40 center field. Like we talk about the small number of guys that have 40-40 capability at the major league level. He's Spencer one. Jones jumps in. He's one of the guys that can actually go 40-40. And, could he whiff during that 40-40 season? Yes. But at the end of the day, nobody's going to remember the 29.8% K rate that Spencer Jones has if he goes 40-40. They're going to remember that he can go 40-40. He should have all the confidence in the world going to Somerset to open his season on Friday. That guy stole the show at spring breakout, stole the show in spring training. He's the it guy in the Yankee system at this point.
Yeah,
he should be supremely confident.
The contact rates weren't even that bad last year either. I understand he's going to whiff, but it wasn't like he was this massive swing and miss guy. Overall contact rate of 72% when you hit the ball as hard as he does and you're as fast as he is. That'll play. He adjusted the bat path or his bat angle and his setup slightly, and I think that's helped him get on plane earlier, whereas before, again, he was a guy that like would start flat and just kind of get steep, and that's why he had a higher ground ball rate. Now starting a little bit more upright, he's pretty much already in his slot, and it's just easier to turn the barrel for him, and you could just see how much easier it is for him to turn that barrel. And now he seems to just have way more comfort, having a lot more success with it, and just adjusting that angle slightly thing may have been all the difference, a little bit more into his backside. Yep. Minimize any extraneous movement because you're a freak and just let your freakish skills shine through. I think we're seeing that with Spencer Jones. This is going to be fun to see a full season from him.
For sure.
Last but not least, Max Clark, 26th overall on the top 100 outfield prospect with the Detroit Tigers system. Assigned to low A, another guy that made some swing adjustments that look good. I'm excited to see what that looks like over the course of a full season here. I mean, great feel for the barrel. A reason that he is a higher floor guy is plus defense in center field, a plus arm. He can motor, and for how compact he is, can hit the ball hard. Also a good feel for the zone. There's some things, he's a forward move guy. And even with the adjustments, some of the things that I've seen on the backfields, he is still struggling to keep his weight back. He is kind of getting forward. And that's understandable because his bat speed is so good and his swing is so compact. We talked about like DeLotter and some other guys. Clark has been able to get away with that his whole career because of the bat speed that he has. But I don't think that he's going to be able to get away with the forward move as much. And that's something that we're going to need to see that lower half get a bit more consistent. He really starts in his base. He's really in it. But guys that start really in it sometimes struggle to stay in it. The guys that are use that, like, hey, let me start stacked on my backside, are the guys that struggle to get there and stay there. So that sway causes them to go back forward. So those guys start stacked. Other guys that, you know, maybe end up moving forward prematurely start stacked and just can't hold it. And that's why you'll see guys kind of start upright and then sink into the backside because it gives them that negative move. Clark seems like he's tinkering a little bit, and I still think he's looking to find that adjustment that helps him stay in his backside. Because if he does that, all of a sudden, I think we'll see above average game power and probably even better just swings against secondaries. I think the adjustments he made with his hands and with the path are going to help a lot, but I'm still a little concerned about that forward move in the lower half consistency. That said, it's so early. That's so classic for young talented hitters, and everything else is so exciting. And the floor is so high with the defensive ability in center field and the approach.
That's the thing. And I feel like he is compact enough to still make the forward move work right now when it comes to putting the ball in play, but it'll just zap his power. And this guy, even without much power, is big league probable because like he's going to put the ball in play. He flies and he's going to be a great defender in center field. So the thing that can turn him into the elite player that the Tigers picked over Wyatt Langford is probably finding that power.
Yeah. And he splashed it. And there's been some swings I've seen where it's like, whoa. And you've seen the BP videos that he'll post. Like it's all under control there. But then you get a little combo in a game and whoop,
and all on of that front lunging. And it's, yeah, it looks like ass.
And that's what I've seen this spring a little bit of. But again, when it's a fastball and he's on time, it's like, whoa, that's a quick stroke. And then the approach being as good as it is, I'm not worried in the slightest. Like that's going to come along. But you look at like, oh, how is a Walker Jenkins producing better results? He's just a little bit more in sync and in tune with his body, and it's a little bit more sequenced. Happens. Does it mean for sure he's going to be the better player long-term? No, because these guys can figure things out over time. I think Clark is going to figure this out as the season goes on. He's already showing, one, the willingness to adjust, two, results that are following that, a little bit more impact, I think a lot more comfort in the box, and I think he'll continue to get there. He wasn't facing the toughest competition in the world. You can get away with a lot more during that. And even, again, against some of the top high school arms, his feel to hit and his whippiness and his hands and his approach can eat everybody alive. He still might in the lower levels. But for him to tap into that ceiling where he's hitting maybe even 20 home runs as well, that's where the lower half will come in. And I think it will. He's going to draw walks. He's going to be a really good hitter. He's going to be a great center fielder. This guy could be a very dynamic and fun prospect. And I know people are going to always talk about who went, you know, before and all that good stuff. But at the end of the day, I don't think it's going to be one of those where it's like, oh my gosh, how could they have picked him? Right? This isn't Ryan Leaf over Peyton Manning. Clark, I think, is going to have a very nice career. He's going to be a war accumulator, and he's a high probability big leaguer who should climb quickly for a prepster. That'll do it for this episode. We only have two more left where we're diving into the rest of these 25 prospects. It'll be 15 or 25 to 10 or 11 and then 10 to 1. So keep an eye out for those episodes. Very excited to keep going through this. As always, thank you for listening. If you could leave a rating, help us grow the show, it would be great. Subscribe on YouTube. I'm going to start doing some breakdowns of some of the outings and swings and all the stuff we talk about with video. I think there'll be some fun things that you'll enjoy on the YouTube side. And go to our Instagram. Go support the new IG. Give us a follow there. We'd appreciate it. Thank you very much. We'll talk prospects with you tomorrow.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.